So for today's Dhamma talk, it's some people who haven't heard me teach before, they sometimes say, oh, I only teach Samatha meditation, calm. And what about some insight meditation? So today is all going to be about insight. I refuse to say insight meditation, because meditation is meditation is meditation. And to the point that often when people start meditating, I mentioned this briefly in one of the questions, that they ask, oh, can you teach meditation? So I teach them Anapanasati. And if they can't do Anapanasati, then I try something else. I teach them breath meditation. And when they can't do breath meditation, I sometimes teach them Satipatthana. If they can't do Satipatthana, then I teach them insight. If they can't do insight, I teach them metta meditation. If metta meditation doesn't work, I teach them loving kindness. If loving kindness doesn't work, then I teach them letting go meditation. And if letting go meditation doesn't work, then I teach them Anapanasati. And by the time I get round one cycle, they don't remember that that's what I taught them in the very beginning. And I don't mind doing that because they're all the same. I mean, how come they're all the same? It's all learning how to calm the hindrances, relax the body, let go of the body, release the mind, and be able to calm the mind so things start to disappear, so you build up energies and clarity and strong mindfulness so you can see the Dhamma. And so that is just the path. It's just eightfold path. And as I mentioned earlier, yes, you can focus on one thing. Put it in front. The front of my hand is in front. But the back of my hand is there. I promise I'm an old monk. I don't tell lies. The back of the hand is there. Now the back is there. You can't see the front, but the front is there. That was Ajahn Chah's simile. But then I decided to get my own simile, to expand similes. And that was the simile of the couple, Sam and Vi. This couple, they live together with their two dogs, Metta and Anapana. And those two dogs were very kind and very friendly. And Sam and Vi, after lunch one day, decided to go up Meditation Mountain, Samadhi Mountain, for a lovely walk. And Sam went up there in particular because of the top of Samadhi Mountain. Oh, it was so still up there. So incredibly calm. And he enjoyed the deep peace. So Sam went up there for the peace and quiet. And that reminds me of that story of that lady I heard, this is about somewhere in California apparently, that she came home from the shopping center with all her groceries, and I took them out of the car, and she manages to open the door of her house with her arms full of groceries, and this dog ran past her into her house. And she was had so much stuff in her hand, she couldn't stop the dog. So she put the groceries on the kitchen table, went looking for the dog, and that dog is a lovely little Labrador dog, curled up in a corner, fast asleep. And she thought, well, you know, it's a lovely dog, it's clean, it's not stray, I don't know what it's doing here, but it's so beautifully asleep, why disturb it? So she left it there and just unpacked the groceries and did a few stuff, and about 2 hours later, she could hear the dog little bark. The dog had got up and wanted to be let out, so she opened the door and the dog went away. Really weird. But the same thing happened the next day. About the next time, same time, she heard the dog barking at the door, she let it in, it went into the corner of the house, had a nice sleep, rest for 2 hours, barked and then went away again. It happened every afternoon, the same time for a few days in a row. And then it was a clean dog. It was obviously well-groomed, had a collar on its neck, and very lovely natured. So then she decided, I've got to find out what's going on here. This is weird. Where does this dog go to the rest of the day and at night time? So he had this wonderful idea. She got a piece of paper and wrote a little note on the piece of paper. Your dog has been coming to my house every afternoon for this time. It's a very clean, lovely dog. It's welcome to come. It's no problem. I like dogs. It doesn't cause me any trouble. It just goes to sleep and then goes out afterwards. But I just wanted to know, you know, where it comes from and why it comes to me. And she folded up the note and put it in the collar. And when the dog went away, the next day when the dog came, had a reply. And the reply was, it said, it's my dog. I think it gave the name of the dog, I can't remember. It only lives, you know, just a couple of blocks away. In my house, we have about five kids, and about three of them are under five, and they're always really noisy, and they sort of harass the dog constantly, and the dog comes over to your house every afternoon for some peace and quiet. P.S., can I come too? Said the husband. You can all understand that. But the just peace and quiet stillness is just so relaxing, re-energizing and therapeutic. So Sam just went up there for a bit of peace and quiet. And Vi, his partner, she just loved photography. And so she took up her, not just these little phones, this is really expensive, you know, Canon, just with all of the filters and zoom lenses and everything else. And I don't know what I'm talking about, but anyway, you could probably expand. And then she went up there because up on Meditation Mountain, you can see forever. You can see great extensive views of reality. Insight was laid all around you. And Meta the dog, she went up there because it was fun. Dogs are really quite smart. They just do things because it's peaceful and it's joyful. They don't think too much. At least I'm not sure, but it looks that way. And Anapana, the other dog, he went up there just because it was, again, so quiet. And everyone else was going up there, so they didn't want to be left alone. So they went up there, Sam, Vi, and Meta, and Anapana. And when they got even halfway up Samadhi Meditation Mountain, oh, it was so calm and still up there. Oh, it was just so peaceful. Sam was just so satisfied, even only halfway up. But he had a pair of eyes, he could see the view. And Vi, even halfway up, you could see so far, so deep into the countryside around. So she was taking all these incredible insight shots. As for Metta the dog, she was wagging her tail. She was so happy, so joyful, up halfway up Meditation Mountain, loving everything. And Anapana Sati was disappearing. That dog was just fading away. And as they got to the top of Meditation Mountain, wow, absolute stillness. Nothing moved. So Sam was seeing, really experiencing this incredible peace, deep stillness. But he opened his eyes and he saw this amazing, you see the whole universe, as it were, in front of you, just all these incredible insights and understanding the nature of reality. It was all there for him. But he was also very happy. An amazing amount of love up there. As for Vi, very quietly, so she didn't disturb the peace, click, taking all these incredible wisdom photographs of great understanding and opening of knowledge from the top of Meditation Mountain. But she could also experience a so satisfying, deep peace, and she could also feel the great love and happiness up there. Mm-hmm. Metta the dog, oh, Metta the dog, amazing, so silently, was running around in circles, waving its tail, as dogs do when they're ecstatic, but didn't bark, kept the peace, round and round, so joyful. Anapana, the breath, couldn't find Anapana, the dog, up there, because at the top of Meditation Mountain, your breath disappears and vanishes. Don't worry, you pick up the dog on the way down. Anapana. And that metaphor stands for on top of Meditation Mountain. You may go up there just for the peace, for the stillness, but the view is right there, you can't miss it. If you get very still, the insights are just so strong. And the joy, the happiness, the bliss is there too. It doesn't matter what you go up there for. Whether you go up there as Sam, just wanting the peace, that's the first one you want up there. The insight and the happiness, they come too. Or you go like Vi, just want to get Vi stands for Vipassana, by the way. And Sam for Samatha. And Vipassana, Samatha. And Metta the dog, and Anapana, Anapanasati. So they all go up there for their own main reasons, but up on top of Meditation Mountain, those things, they coexist. Peace, insight, wisdom, enlightenment, great metta and joy, happiness, and also things vanishing. So that was my simile of the journey up Meditation Mountain. And those of you who've been listening a long time to my talks, you know, every now and again I add something else. Stories always grow, they're meant to grow. So it started off with just Sam and Vi, Sam to Vipassana, but hang on, what about metta, loving kindness? Because that goes together. You can do metta meditation, samatha meditation, Vipassana meditation, it doesn't really matter, but they all have to be there together. If there's no metta, it doesn't work. Without kindness, the hard Vipassana or hard samatha, just it doesn't go anywhere. It's just tight. But we have the loving kindness and the calming and the insight, and they all go together. I put Anapanasati up there, the dog, simply because to know that these things vanish too. It's a vanishing. And so that's actually how our path works. And it is true that sometimes that people want to know exactly what's happening. And if, yeah, you're getting insights, but you're not happy, you haven't got loving kindness, it's not working. You can fake insights. Read them up in a book. And you can say these really profound things, like, the one who knows doesn't speak. The one who says doesn't know. Say, wow, that's really deep. Ajahn Brahm talks a lot, therefore he doesn't know. But so did the Buddha. So people can have all these incredible, logical, like crazy wisdom. Wow, that's really deep. How can it be crazy and wise at the same time? So sometimes when we get these... Because I remember going to talks like that when I was a layperson, a lay Buddhist. We all go out after the talk on these great Zen masters and big gurus, and said, wow, that was really deep talk. I said, did you understand any of it? No, not at all. That's why it's really deep. So we were mixing up the lack of understanding and what we'd call gobbledygook, nonsense, go my own, with like wise teachings. So in the end, just we realized that, if you really understand it, you can feel it, and it makes you calm, and it makes you kind and joyful. And for those who don't believe that sometimes I have to quote the suttas to make sure that people realize I don't make this up by myself. And that is one of my favorite suttas, the Dhammacaitya Sutta. If you haven't heard me quote this before, it is where The King Pasenadi went to see the Buddha and at the Jeta Grove Monastery, and it was actually the last time the king would go there because he was about to die soon. And he went there. It's actually amazing sometimes that these experiences, sometimes people know that their end is coming, and then they usually go to the temple or the monastery. It happened with one of the ghost stories over in Wat Nanachat, when this Chinese Thai, he owned this the cookie factory. So that's why we always like to have him come visit. We didn't have many sweets in those days. But anyway, he came one evening and he said, I just feel like staying the night. I was the guest monk at the time. So I said, yeah, of course you can stay the night. And so, you know, I settled him in Wat Nanachat, in the guest quarters. And then one of his friends, who was a station master of Bung Wai Station, he came and said, oh, what are you staying in the monastery for? Come and stay with me. You can have a dinner, and I've got a nice place in the station house you can stay. So he took him to the station house, and that night he died. This fellow who owned the cookie store. And we did the funeral, and then a couple of days later, the station master, he was, because he was, you know, one of the most educated men in that part of the village, that he was teaching English to one of the young girls there. And the young girl sort of, that's why I think the station master just turned around a little bit, and then one of the young girls, she screamed. And then the young girl who was being taught English screamed and fainted. I didn't know what was going on. And when they roused her, she was speaking in a really weird voice. She'd been possessed. And so they called one of the old women in the next house. She was the oldest woman in the village. She had lots of experience of this. She came up and she asked, who are you? Who are you? And this young girl would not look at the station master. I said, who are you? And he said, I am the owner of the cookie factory. Sort of, and I died, and I'd really, really upset at the station master. He's supposed to be my friend. Number one, I was meant to die in the monastery, and he took me home. So that's number one. And number two, he didn't do the ceremony properly. I said, what do you mean? You did a proper ceremony? He said, no, it's Chinese. I wanted a boiled pig's head put at the tree. Okay, this was northeast Thailand, I don't know what. And he said, that's what I want. And he said, I'm staying in the... It's interesting, he said he was staying in the mango tree next to the station house. He wanted to put there. And so, and then the old lady said, okay, we'll do that. And then the girl just fainted again. And when she came to, she knew nothing about that interrogation. But she said the last thing she saw was the ghost of the cookie... it's not the cookie monster. I keep saying it's the cookie monster. It's a cookie owner, cookie maker factory sort of ghost. That's the last thing she saw. That's why she screamed. So I remember them coming to the temple the next day and said, what should we do? I said, well, you know, just if you want to have the ghost there, you know, for weeks and weeks, you know, that's, you know, you're going to have to sort of just leave it there. But if you want to get rid of it, get a pig's head and put it on there. Got it from the market. So that was an interesting story. Sometimes, but what was fascinating there was that sometimes when a person knows they're going to die, they come to the temple. It's not that all people who come to the temple are about to die. But it was fascinating. That's what he was wanting to do. Anyway, so where was I going with this? Yeah, are the cookie monster temples dying? I love going on these tangents, just explore somewhere else, but sometimes I don't get how to get back on the main route. Talking about Samatha Vipassana, insight, and what about? There's a story behind this. King Prasenadi, thank you. Now, of course, I knew what was going on, but I just wanted, this is my skillful means to make sure that each one of you pay attention as well. Could you believe that? I don't, I made it up, but anyway. So King Prasenadi going, is just about to die. And he went into the Buddha's room. And, you know, he said just in all his life, the Buddha was more than a teacher. It was almost like a father to him. Because as a king, you know, you can't take advice from anybody because people just tell you what you want to hear. But for the Buddha would always sort of, you know, he had the authority to actually tell the Prasenadi off if he did something wrong. And also was just such a good friend to him. And it was just walking distance from the palace to where the Buddha was staying in the Jetagro. So they were just really good friends. And so he said just how much he loved, after work in the palace, you know, walking over to the Jeta Grove to see his friend and teacher, the Buddha. And he also said he loved coming to this monastery, the Jetavana, because all the monks were smiling and happy. And that was a great quote. It was like a photograph of a monastery in the time of the Buddha. Description. The monks were smiling and happy. And he said, well, that's what you can expect, great king, when the monks and the nuns are practicing meditation appropriately and getting insight. And I thought, wow, what a great confirmation of the importance of happiness in meditation, both as a path and a sign that the meditation and insight is working, the happiness. So, from that, you understand that insight, stillness, they do all come together. But there's two types of insight in this particular talk. And this is not some of the suttas and just look at where does the Buddha say there's two types of insight and try which one am I supposed to. It's just how insight is developed to overcome obstacles in the path. Insight into how to meditate, basically, and how to be still, how to be free. And also the great insights which happen at the end of the path, the enlightenment insights, which free you once and for all. But first of all, little insights which, you know, you've all been learning ever since you came here. Insights such as the best way to overcome sloth and torpor, have a sleep. Practical ones, which actually work. Because if you fight sloth and torpor, you get more tired. Why? So this is where you get into the insight of how this works. And that is something which I talk about a lot, but it's very important. And I don't know why more people don't talk about this. Ajahn Chah talked about this, and you can actually see it's there, that as you become still, what is stillness anyway? It's not just bodily stillness, but it's the mind being still in this moment. Not thinking, not worrying, not being out of the past. Basically not doing any work, or minimum work. And you do find, yeah, sometimes you go to sleep if it's you are sleep deprived, or you're going through some sickness or something, it's the nature of the body. But most of the time, when you sort of, you know, you settle down in a retreat center, you know, you're healthy, you're reasonably healthy, and peaceful, you're not doing very much, you're not using your mobile phone or your tablet or the internet or something, which has got huge amounts of problems. So, when you are still, your energies start to revive. You start to get alive. You start to get energized. You start to feel some zing and some zoom and some woof in your body and in your mind. You start to have, you're releasing all this wasted energy which people mostly use on thinking, planning, going, lingering in the past. It's amazing how much we waste our energies. I'm talking especially about mental energy. Every time you fight something, you're fighting battles which don't need to be fought and which you'll lose. Remembering stuff which you cannot change. You're trying to actually to do things which cannot be achieved. Wanting things which are out of your reach. So, when we stop all of that, the mind gets energized, awake, powerful. You are empowering your mindfulness. When people talk a lot about mindfulness, it's just ordinary mindfulness. Yeah, you might be mindful as you're walking in the dark without a flashlight. You're aware, but you cannot be aware enough to see things. The world is too dark, too grey, too misty. But as you meditate more and more, when you live a simple few days in a place like this, when you don't have to cook, you don't have to look at the menu and see which one to choose, you don't have to stress out about meeting a schedule or thinking, oh, I came late for the talk, I'm going to be punished. Oh, you get tight and tense, you waste energy that way. No, here you are free. If you miss the talk, it is recorded. If you miss lunch, there's always breakfast the next day. You won't starve and die. And anyway, I know that sometimes people, they sneak food into their rooms. I don't know about you, but many people take biscuits, underground biscuits, or especially noodles. Got your stash of noodles just in case. You can get pizza delivery. Ring up the local pizza store and tell them, just don't come into Jhana Grove, just by the gate. Should be telling you all those, shouldn't I? Anyway. But there's people worry too much, and that takes a lot of energy. When you don't do that, you find, even if you don't meditate, you don't think you're meditating, you're sitting there just watching the trees grow, sleeping all the time, just drinking tea, just having walks in nature, all of those things, because it's far less than you do in your ordinary daily life, just that much gives you a boost of energy. And when you get the boost of energy, you can actually experience the trees. They're beautiful. You can have that cup of tea. Take it slowly. Oh, it's delicious. The very first taste. Oh. This is what happens when you wake up. You know the word for waking up in Pali? Bujjati. The awakened one? The Buddha. That is much more closer to the meaning of that word than enlightened one. It is awakened one. So what you do, it's not just awakening to a truth, it's having your mind awakened, empowered, to actually so you can see things. So as you become still, you realize that the power of insight becomes stronger. You are now able to see more, able to smell more. Even just you go out and you smell, especially the forest after the rains. It's a special fragrant smell. And if you can stop and take it in, it's gorgeous. You can feel the rain on your head, the wind drying it off afterwards. You can take your shoes and socks off and you can walk. I can hear now the amazing sound of, I think it's a toast going through my my intestines. It's squeaking. That's how I think it did need a bit more oil this morning, I think, so it can flow through without making squeaky sounds. That's only a joke. But you can actually hear more, you can appreciate more. And even in the five sense world, you are awakened. The senses are stronger. And so, and not only that, remember I told the story of walking up Kingsbury Drive, it's not just you see more. Weird, but things are supposed to be suffering, but as your mind gets stronger, it actually things look more beautiful. And of course you make this sort of the connection, maybe with negativity, tiredness, depression, is because you're half asleep. And that was really tied in. So one of the first times I went to UK, in sort of the winter time, to be with my family for Christmas, like you go there for New Year, for Chinese New Year, to Malaysia or to Singapore, to Hong Kong, wherever your family are. It's a tradition to be with your family at New Year's in the Chinese tradition, or Christmas for the Western tradition, or whenever. But anyway, just when I first went there, that I realized that just how depressing London was in that time of the year. I already made a story about old grey tea and everything else. Everything is grey there. But then my brother was saying, yeah, you know, they even named it sad. An increase in people with depression at that time of the year. Sad meant seasonal affective disorder. Sad. And they overcame seasonal affective disorder by getting all these people who were depressed at that time of the year into a room where they had bright lights, loud music. I think they used reggae music, which was really loud and danceable. And they put everybody in Hawaiian shirts and really bright colored trousers and skirts. Everything was really bright and uplifting. And they were dancing around to reggae music. Wa-da-da-da. And they were just, that stopped the depression. It was just a stimulus of the five senses. There was just nothing to be stimulated by in England at that time of the year. But they put some brightness in it. And I've noticed that when I was growing up, you say good morning to someone in England during November, December, and they just look at you as if you're crazy. But in summertime, you know, July, August, they say good morning. They're much happier that time of the year. So even just in the underground trains, I mean, that's always dark in there, and it's always really gloomy. No one ever is happy in there except, not this year, but the year before, I was in the underground train going from one place to another to give a talk, and a woman came and sat next to me. She said, I remember the conversation. She said, are you a Buddhist monk? So I went, well, I think so. A real Buddhist monk? Yeah, I'm a real Buddhist monk. Oh, great, because I want to ask you some questions about Buddhism. So we're talking about Buddhism. We got onto the subject pretty quickly on reincarnation. What actually is reincarnation? Well, look, can you prove it? I said, well, yeah, actually, that it just happened that I think on the November retreat beforehand, it's a couple of years ago, that there was a meditator who came all the way from Italy. And he's an Italian Buddhist. And I said, and he gave me the interview time. He told me this really weird problem he had. Well, not really a problem, but he couldn't really understand what was going on. Because when he went to his room in this cottage to sleep, he had this very vivid dream. I've been talking about, you know, rebirth, reincarnation, remembering your past lives. But his memory in his dream was that he was a strand of spaghetti. That's really weird. And he's Italian, yes, but strand of spaghetti. And this, maybe because, you know, he's missing his food that time of night, he don't eat in the evening. But the next night, he said, he dreamt he was a piece of ravioli. And then you know what happened? It clicked. You know, I said, yeah, and I was telling this anecdote in the underground train. And if you've been in the underground trains, that people just refuse to look you in the face. They're just reading their newspapers, but they're listening. Or sometimes they look at your reflection in the glass, thinking that you can't see them. Or they're diddling on their iPhones. But they're listening all the time. Because I realized they were listening. When I said, well, they know what the solution was. He said, he was an Italian Buddhist. He was recollecting his pastor lives. And that's exactly what all the people in the underground train did. They shook their heads, they giggled, they groaned. But they made eye contact with me. Which would show that I got them. They're listening. So anyway, recollecting past lives. So anyway, but the happiness is comes up in meditation. That when you really wake up, you can see things. And so in this retreat, you know, hopefully, as you wake up more and more, you'll find that what you see is actually more happy, more joyful. The food tastes much better every day. And okay, you know, Bianca is just really social, but she doesn't make most of the food. Most of the food comes from outside. And it's very delicious food. Why? It's not the cooks. And I really respect those cooks. They really come all this way. They put lots of effort into this. It's not the cooks, it's your mind. Your mind, as it wakes up, can find so much more flavor in the food than you'd ever tasted before. Not this year, but the year before, when I did my own personal retreat for a couple of weeks in Jhana Grove, really nice meditation. The first meal I had, the breakfast with the monks, baked beans. And I remember just so clearly putting the first bean in my mouth. Never ever have I tasted a baked bean, a single bean like that. It was a taste explosion. The flavors, they just expanded in my mouth. You know, the sweet sour tomato and the salt and the texture. Have you ever tasted the texture of one baked bean? Not too hard, it sort of crumbles in your mouth. Just only like a bean could, not like a potato. The potato is just, well, and it's just a bit too hard, but this is a bit soft and a tiny bit granular. And you taste it and wow! Never before have I tasted one baked bean, which is so amazing and deep and just took over all my senses just for that sort of, that taste moment. It was amazing. It was incredible. Sometimes people think I'm mad. But if you've had a good meditation and you go and taste one grain of rice and you put it in your mouth and you savor it, wow, that is incredible. You get all the texture, the flavor, the smoothness as you crunch it between your teeth, wow. That's what happens. And it's good fun because it shows you something is going on. This is not drugs. You're not going crazy, but you're waking up. And when you wake up, it's called the Chitta Sankhara. If you look in the Anapanasati Sutta, why does the breath become joyful and happy? The breath is just a breath. But when you get very still, your mind has got so much energy, it just goes into that and it becomes really beautiful. I can't resist one of my grossest anecdotes. You know what's coming, here it comes. A retreat some years ago. Really, because I meditate too, and I don't have as much time as you guys do on these retreats to meditate, but I really get into it. And then I just got some really nice meditation. Wow. And then so far away, I had to go to the toilet to do a number two. And I made big mistake. Before flushing that toilet, I looked. Wow! I mean, really, this is not made up. Wow! I don't know if anyone was in the next toilet cubicle, but they'd have been sort of, what's happening in here? Wow! I try and make sure I don't do that on aircraft, otherwise they think, wow, this monk is going wow in the toilets. They'll count all the flight attendants to make sure it's not, what do they call it, the 100 mile, no. What is it called? Mile High Club, yeah. How do you know that? It's okay. But anyway, just wow, because I was shocked, surprised. Just one little floater was gorgeous. It's not just one shade of brown. Check it out next time. It's all different shades of brown. The darker brown, the lighter brown, and just like any great artist, just the way those colors interact. You know, their placement and the fact that just there's just not one color, just the way they balance And it's amazing just the meaning and the depth of that. And then I started focusing, just naturally, just on the shape. It was like a sculpture. The different little balls all put together in a just like something which Michelangelo or Rodin would actually sculpture. It's amazing just how it all balanced with the colours. And just the other thing which I noticed, to really be gross, there's always a little bit of mucus on the outside which made it glisten in the water. It was like a diamond. And then, the amazing thing was the fragrance. Because people have all these fake fragrances. You know, the aftershaves and the deodorants and the scents. Oh, that's all fake stuff. This is actually real. Just earthy, basic. Just not concocted, but just there for just such a long time in the history of humankind. You know, it was there in the time of the cavemen, Neanderthals, that fragrance of earth, of wow. I was really getting into it. And I must confess, I honestly did think, not just once, but quite a few times, of taking it out and showing it to the friends. Look at this, it's amazing, it's wonderful. And but, you know, this is where your training as a monk comes to help. Letting go. Not attachment. It's one of the hardest things I've ever given up. But I did it. I managed. I'm very proud I could actually let it go. I had to press a button. No, I don't want to do that. Oh, come on, you have to, Ajahn Brahm. No. I don't want to. I can't press. No. Okay. Ah. I pressed the flush button. And the most beautiful piece of shit I'd ever seen went out of my life forever. Now, I tell that story not just to gross you out, although that's part of it. But there's also insight there as well. If a thing which is usually repulsive looks to be so gorgeous and beautiful and fragrant, what is beauty and repulsion? Why is it that the breath can look so gorgeous? Why is it that people can do the so-called super meditations on parts of the body? And those parts of the body can actually just glow with beauty. A lot of times, it is just what the mind adds to things. And a still mind can add beauty to so much. Overcomes fear and sees something like a tarantula, this beautiful little spider which you love to bits. You can see a little snake crawling in the grass and have such not just empathy and compassion but just love for it. To see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. How you can see any enemy and love them to bits. It's weird, but this is what happens. Such kindness, such love, not forced, not fabricated, but coming from a very still and powerful mind. And now if you ever read those stories of elephants charging the Buddha, and the elephant just couldn't kill the Buddha, just can't do it. Not because of any psychic stuff, but just the power of like love and kindness. Such beautiful acceptance and peace. If you're a monk and you're asking a question, you just can't ask any questions. Just overpowered by the beauty of acceptance and peace and stillness. And just how your boss at work the boss from hell, you just look at them and they melt. Just like that great story of one of the students in Sydney, Julie, went all the way to London. She had a fashion business. Big break. You know, the opportunity when a big fashion house or something in London was interested in her products. So, negotiating, and then come over to London to sign the contract. At the last moment, she had to leave her little baby, Holly. I named her Surya, son. And then there, and her husband, David, told her to go all the way to London, last minute, first available flight, fly over there. It was important for their business. She got there, just showered and changed. No time for a rest. No, she showered and changed in the hotel. Straight to the boardroom. And the board members looked at her and said, "Oh, yeah, you know, you're from Sydney. You wasted your time." The CEO or the managing director, whichever it was, the boss, is in a really bad mood today. There's no way he's going to sign any contract, especially yours. Go back. Now, if you'd come all that way, made such a sacrifice. She said, "Oh, I'm not going. At least I'm going to see the fellow." "Suit yourself," they said, "but you're wasting your time. We know our boss. When he's in this mood, you know, it's best to avoid him." "Well, I'm going to see him anyway." So because she was a meditator, she went in the corner of the boardroom, crossed her legs, hands in her lap, closed her eyes and started meditating. This was a few years ago. Maybe, I don't know, 15 years maybe ago, I don't know. But anyway, you know, meditation wasn't at all popular at all. It was really weird, especially in boardrooms of big companies. And so she was sitting there, but she would do a loving kindness meditation. Just really peaceful, getting some really energy up. So much loving kindness that everything looked beautiful and wonderful. But the boss came in. Saw this woman he didn't know in a boardroom full of men in those days. As if things change these days, hope so. But anyway, boardroom full of men. She saw this girl sitting, meditation, in his boardroom. "What does blah, 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 think she's doing in my blah, 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 boardroom? Get out now!" I try my best to be angry, but I think I need more practice. So anyway, no, it was a shock. And so everyone, and he was glaring at her like some yakka, some demon. So I mean, they read about in the suttas, or something just about ready to eat you up. Well, more like that, you know, you get some idea. And so she opened her eyes. But if you're really peaceful in meditation, nothing can upset you. You're not afraid. You're so peaceful and calm. They can shout at you, whatever. Just like I say in the lotus, they can urinate on you and it just all falls off. You don't keep anything. And so she simply got up and walked towards him. And she told me that the words came out of her mouth just automatically, not premeditated. And she looked at him and she noticed his eyes and said, "You've got such beautiful blue eyes, like my baby Holly back in Sydney." And that's not the usual response a CEO hears when he's just shouted at somebody. And she said that he went silent. It was like all the fuses were blowing in his brain. What the heck is going on? I don't know how to deal with this. I never experienced this before. I just shouted at someone, told them to get them out of my boardroom. And they just come up with a beautiful smile on their face and say, "You've got beautiful blue eyes." And in the space of 1 minute or 2 minutes, I'm not quite sure how long, but a very short time, now the anger on his face just melted. And he smiled and said, "Really? I've got beautiful blue eyes." And then they signed the contract. And it was such an amazing experience. She told me when I next saw her in Sydney. And she said that after that, I had my contract signed. I was just really jet-lagged and tired and, missed my daughter. I wanted to go and call and make sure everything was all right. She was only a baby, about 2 or 3 years of age at the time. And so she wanted to get out. But all the directors, apparently, they formed a circle around her so she couldn't escape. And they said, "But we're not going to let you go until you teach us how the heck you did that." That we've never seen anything like that before. And we want you to teach us how you did it. And that was their story. Eventually they let her go back. But it was amazing, just the insight into how powerful the mind can be when it's still. And how these great joys and happiness, which can melt anybody, comes up. Now you're getting some amazing insights which actually work. Not the nature of reality, which you argue with people at a coffee table, but this is something which actually works in your daily life. When you meet sort of dangerous or confronting situations, the energy of peacefulness, so stillness, you can feel yourself energized, and happiness, piti sukha, start to grow. Your happiness gets stronger and stronger. And sometimes people, I just go around Jambhavan, that's just too soft, they just mess around, they tell jokes and funny stories all day. You gotta be strict to get enlightened. Yeah? I've been around a long time. Especially the last 20 years I've been very round. But it's something which I have seen and experienced by just experiential wisdom, that when you start to get peaceful and you start to get happy, you start to understand things. See the nature, the happiness engages you. You want to come up to the next meditation retreat. Oh yes, very nice. That beautiful sound of my tummy rumbling. Could you hear that? Isn't that delightful? Oh, I just can't wait to see what comes out. Shall I take a photo of it for you? But as the happiness comes up, it engages you. How can you watch the breath for long periods of time? Unless it's fun. Unless it's joyful. Unless it's a joy which, where the heck is this coming from? Why is my breath so gorgeous? So delightful? Why is this? You can understand you're awakening the power of your mind. Power mindfulness. And you're just starting. You're superpower mindfulness. You see this beautiful mind, it appears brilliant. The limiters become incredibly strong when your mindfulness gets very still. Energies pour into your awareness. And that limiter gets so strong, you can't feel your body. No more than you can see the stars once the sun is up in the sky. 5 senses get blotted out because the nimitta is so strong, gorgeous and beautiful. But don't get scared. Don't try and do anything. Don't try and control this. If you control it, you're wasting your energies. It's like you're pricking the balloon and all the energy, comes out. All the air disappears. It deflates the nimitta. So you just leave it. It gets brighter and brighter and brighter. It gets so strong you can't control it. That's what makes it scary. Anything you can't control which is really powerful, more powerful than you, that's why you get scared. That's one of the reasons why people get scared of mice. They run much faster than we can, so we can't catch them. They can't do any harm, mice. That's why elephants get afraid of mice, because elephants are big and slow. Mice are fast. That's the only reason why, because they can't control and judge where they're going to be next. The uncontrollable is fearful. That's why governments try to control people, because they're afraid. So, once the control has been let go of, you're still. It gets brighter and brighter, more and more powerful. You have to have a lot of selflessness, a lot of letting go. No control, you find the mind gets very bright. So bright that she's incredible limitless. And of course you can't take your eyes off of them. The mental eyes, that is. Because too powerful. Anything powerful like that, so beautiful, so much. That's why it's so hard for me to let go of that bit of contents of the toilet bowl. This makes your mind just gets almost drawn in. It's just so beautiful, so stunning. So unexpected. Imagine a limiter. It's gorgeous, and there's nowhere to flush it. Beautiful, and of course you get drawn in. Irresistible. Then you're in jhanas. Bliss upon bliss I've never experienced before. Wow. Where did that bliss come from? Think now, you know, if a piece of content of a toilet bowl can look so gorgeous, imagine your mind. Wow. You're getting insight into the nature of this body and mind, especially in the nature of mindfulness and how it gets really empowered and how it can see things just so joyfully, which means you can stay with it for long enough to really get into it and understand it. And you come out afterwards just looking at things in a total different way. Just like those directors. Never seen anything like that before. So they would not let Julie go and take a break. Want to find out, first of all, what happened. That your body vanished. And your mind just took over. The jitter. People have so many theories about the nature of the mind. What is the mind? Is it some byproduct of the brain? Is it just a fantasy? Is it just a soul created by a god? Is it, what is it? Theories upon theories upon theories. But now you have it right in front of you for hours. Now you can understand from personal experience what this mind is. How beautiful it can be. The mind is radiant, prabhasara, when it's not defiled by all these taints or poisons or whatever which come from outside. The radiant mind is right there for you. And to think that this mind has something to do with the body, it's clear. And to think that this mind will somehow disappear when the body disappears, more gomayang. And to think that you are this mind, that you can control things, that the will is something which you possess. More gomaya. Can you understand that yet? Of course you can't. You rebel. It doesn't make any sense. But that's one of the reasons why in this very life, in this very meditation retreat, right now, if you let go enough, limiters come, brilliant, powerful, stillness makes it happen. It's so, so powerful. And then you can understand where things like psychic powers come from. Get something as powerful as that, huge energies. Of course, some things can happen. You want to remember your past life? Just ask, what's my earliest memory? And it will come up for you. So, superpower mindfulness. Personal experience of the power of this mind. And the fact the stream of consciousness will not be destroyed at your death. But if you let go enough, it can disappear and vanish forever. Just like, so still, when the bus comes to take you to your next life, they can't find you. Stillness is disappearing. And the bus to your next life just leaves, not being able to find where you're standing or sitting. You're gone, you're disappeared, nibbana. Good riddance to suffering. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, that was the talk on bliss.